And I was telling a colleague of mine in the staff room, and he's this sort of older teacher who's really gruff and kind of awesome. He looks a bit like Shrek. He's got one of those beautiful faces. And he's like, oh, he just threw a book at me. He's like, I won't swear the way he did. He goes, this book's about that nonsense that you've been doing. And that's sort of what set me along the road and sort of codified what we were doing a bit.
Listening to the NZPE Teacher Cast, a podcast sharing some of the inspirational stories from amazing teachers and educators within New Zealand and around the world. Today's episode is sponsored by My Study Series, an online learning platform supporting Kiwi teachers and students through NCEA. With online achievements and badges for completing key tasks, My Study Series ensures students are highly engaged and motivated to learn. Check it out now at mystudyseries.co.nz.
Kia ora everyone and welcome to episode 25 of the NZPE Teacher Cast. Today's episode features an exciting and passionate science teacher from Australia. Pete Woodseen is a flipped learning and gamification guru that I first met at FlipCon NZ earlier in the year. His presentation there was one of the best I've seen for a long time. You'll definitely get a feel for Pete's enthusiasm and love for innovation in the classroom during the session, and I really do encourage you to check out some of the links in the show notes to some great things that Pete is doing. And don't forget to check out the NZPE TeacherCast Facebook page and give it a like too. Pete, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience and a few tidbits about your school and the students you teach?
Yeah, no, that's not a drama. I was a scientist before I was a teacher for a little while, and it turned out I really like people more than I like microscopes. And so I sort of, So what happened was I was there one day, sort of a bit unhappy with my career as a scientist. And I saw School of Rock.
You serious?
I was like, yeah. And I enrolled into a teaching degree the next day because I was like, that looks like fun. I'll give that a bash. And that's exactly what happened. So yeah, that's how I started. But I teach science. I teach high school science, chemistry, biology. I haven't taught biology for a couple of years. Chemistry is what I really enjoy, and I've been lucky that I can do that now. But yeah, so I teach chemistry. I was teaching in Sydney to start off with. My wife and I, we got married just about the year before I started teaching. So teaching for 9 years now. And we sort of, we're in our nice little house in Marrickville, and which is in the center of Sydney. It's really nice. And I was teaching at a fairly rough state school out in Western Sydney, and it was really fun. I loved it. But then we had a child, and my parents got a bit sick, so we had to leave Sydney, and we sort of ended up out west now. And so now we're rural New South Wales, and yeah, I teach at a big-ish independent school, private school. It's, yeah, it's nice. It's a sort of seen as the fancy school in town. It's not really. I thought it was the fancy school when I first turned up, but it turns out it's kids like anyone else. And it's really nice. They're sort of, you know, children who are fairly engaged, and yeah.
I've got this note in my in my questions here. When I was doing the research for the podcast episode, I Googled your name and I went looking for a few things and tried to get a bit of information. And seriously, every single picture I found of you, you look different. So you're a man of many faces. Some you're shaved, others you've got an afro. What's the deal with that?
I am a lifelong metalhead, and so generally I've had long hair and a big beard my whole life. Since I could grow a beard, but I've always had long hair. And then, yeah, I was about... Oh, no, my daughter was just under one and I crashed a motorbike. Truck had spilled a bunch of oil on the road and on the corner, and I hit it. It was nice. I was pulling through. I was like, yeah. And then I hit the dry patch and all of a sudden the bike flipped and I wasn't pulling through and I broke my collarbone and I broke some ribs, and that was the last time I got to have long hair. So after that, the hair goes between afros and a bit longer. But a couple of months ago, my son decided he wanted a haircut, so he's like, all right, Dad, I'm not going unless you go with me. And apparently, this hipster haircut I've got now is the only haircut they give men. So that's what I've got. I do like to change it up a bit. It just sort of keeps the kids at work on their toes and really winds my wife up a little bit when the beard disappears. So she doesn't like it too much.
Good on you. I first met you at FlipCon NZ, which you made the trip over the ditch for. And we'll talk about your fantastic presentation shortly. But first of all, what were your thoughts on the conference? Because, you know, it was the first one we've had in New Zealand. And in my opinion, Flip Learning is really in its infancy in New Zealand. So what did you think of it? And maybe what was your best takeaway?
Well, for me, it was very much a beginner conference, which I thought was really good. I found most people who were there were, because this is, as I said, this is my fifth year down that road, but most of the people there were very much entirely new. Like they hadn't tried it at all. So it had a real beginner vibe to it. I get the feeling the next one won't. I get the feeling the next one will be a bit more, you know, like it'll be aimed at people a bit further down the road, trying to get people to come back, I suppose. But a lot of the presentations were really good. But I think my takeaway, which is probably the same with most conferences I've ever been to, was not really the presentations. It was the, where I think they're valuable is the people you get to meet and have a chat to, like a proper chat, like not just sort of, you know, like it's, you get to have good talk to people, and it's really, really fun. I loved it. So I think Amy Shackleton, who is not Amy Shattuck, but Amy Shackleton, she's a teacher from Melbourne, and she was there as well. And she articulated it the best I've heard. And she's like, this is my tribe. Everyone's doing different things, but we all come back to that key central thing. We've all got that one thing we're talking about. Most of us are the only teacher in our school doing it. So with my school, what I didn't say earlier is, we're 100 teachers, and 5 years ago, I was the only teacher doing this. And now there's about 17, 18 of us, but that's still not heaps. And when I go to something like FlipCon, I'm surrounded by people who've got similar experiences, you know, that they've had that struggle of being the lone person in their school. And it's a really nice thing. And so it was really, yes, that finding my tribe is, I guess, the... Was that yours or mine? I think that might have been mine. Yeah.
I've got airplanes. You've got the boy races.
Yeah, we had the Bathurst 1000 down the road, and the locals have been a bit crazy. But yeah, so that was what my big takeaway is just meeting like so many people like yourself and Jeremy and Stephen, the maths teacher. And I can't remember his last name because it was a long name. That's the one. but it was a really good thing to just get there and meet these people who... I say, and there's your plans. I never would have met, and I would have got to have that little, you know, sort of back and forth on Twitter, but I never would have got that chance to actually meet those people and feel connected to them. So I think something like FlipCon, and it doesn't have to be FlipCon, it's any professional conference you can get to. If you can find people who have a similar interest, because we work in these wonderful schools where we have all these people around us who are our friends and they support us. But there's always, when you're trying something new or a bit different, there's always that, yeah, it's just that you're separated out. You're automatically just by what you're doing. And it was good to have people who understand and similar experience. It was, what was crazy, you're right. Like it seems much newer there, but it looks like there's a lot less, at least of the teachers who were at FlipCon, there's a lot less of the teachers who are going to be doing it on their own. Like there were a lot of people who'd sent like, 5-6 people from a school. So yeah, I was really impressed. But yeah, getting that meet people, that's my big takeaway.
I like your discussion on tribe, and it's a term that I only came about when I started doing a lot of business related stuff, and it's a term that's quite often used in there. And I haven't tended to hear it used in education in New Zealand, because we associate tribe with Māori culture and stuff like that. But I think it's a really good description of how people can unite on for a common cause and really feed off one another and network and stuff like that. And you're right, and that's exactly what probably I took away best from FlipCon New Zealand as well. So that's really cool. In terms of the Kiwi flipped educators who presented, I mean, you've been in the game quite a while now. Do you think you had any feedback with kind of the way that, just general feedback around how those Kiwi presenters, handled themselves in terms of their discussion and their understanding and knowledge and stuff on flip learning?
I do, but before I do that, I do want to say I'm an Indigenous man, and tribe is a very loaded term over here as well. Okay. I guess that's not the ideal word. It's not one that we would use over here. In fact, we tend to not use it with our Indigenous people at all, because we are nations and not tribes. But yes, so that's probably why I didn't think of that. So sorry. The presenters there were fantastic. Jeremy Cummings, he did an excellent presentation that sort of hit right where I was at. In fact, that's the one that really hit where I was at, because he was talking about leadership and bringing people along and trying that sort of school-wide. So at my school, I run an action research group on flip learning. So, and that's our 17 teachers, and we're building that up, and we've now all got like research projects that we're trying to actually be a bit objective on. We know it works now, but how does it work and why is it working in certain areas? So his was really good. Like, I got a lot out of his on how to bring people along and how to set up the system in a whole system way, which was quite nice. Sharon Henry, I actually first met her at FlipCon Adelaide, but I went along and I didn't see one of her presentations, but I did the primary school panel with her, which is weird because I'm not a primary school teacher, but I've done a bit of work with the primary school teachers, or one or two of them last year.
She's not primary school either.
That's right. She's not either, is she?
No, I used to work with her.
I don't know what we were doing. But I had a... My wife's a primary school teacher, and so I've got a bit of... Yeah, sure. I tell you what, man, I would not be a primary school teacher for... You couldn't pay me enough. Like, the amount of work they have, it is just insane. But hearing her talk, like, she had a lot of creative solves to problems that I've also been having, which have been... Because we're a rural school, so... we're not a poor school, and our families aren't poor families by any stretch, but where we are, we've got kids on farms who just don't have the internet. Mm. Like, they can't even get mobile phone reception where they're at to use data that way. So she had some interesting solves there, and like with access issues and stuff like that. So it was, those two in particular were really good. But for me, mostly it was actually just seeing the... Because again, a lot of it was very aimed at beginners, and it was really good seeing, just getting to meet people.
Hey, you've got a fantastic story about how or why you started flipping. Could you share that story with us?
Yeah, it's a similar story to a lot of people, but mine was I had a student, and she was really sick, and it was that sort of sick where she's off for a while, and she's probably, you know, like it was a glandular fever kind of issue, which then turned into chronic fatigue. So she was off for like a month at a time. So one of the things we were doing is I was like, all right, sweet. I'll start off with not making my own videos. We're doing this in class. And she was really keen. Like, she was this little really sweet year nine kid. And so, you know, she was struggling. She's like, oh, I really want to do something. Can you send me some stuff home? And I was like, well, I know, you know, sitting there reading this stuff is probably not to her strength. So I was like, here you go. I set up a WordPress blog, and I was like, here's tonight's video, send her an email. And then, you know, watch this, answer these questions, or write a bit about this. And then the next day, answer these questions, write about this, watch this video, that sort of stuff. Send me your things in, I'll give you some feedback. And we sort of kept that up. And then I found out she sort of got a bit out of sync with the rest of the class. So I came into one class and I was like, all right, kids, we're going to do this today. Bang. Here we go. Look on the board. I think it was about cholera. Cholera is what sticks in my eyes. It was a disease topic. And I started and this kid's like, oh, I know that. So I know all about cholera. And he was like, it's this and this and this. And one of the other kids in the other room was like, no, it's not that. It's this. And I was like, well, what are we doing? How do you guys have any idea what you're talking about? And it turned out that they'd been watching the videos. And so once I had that, we were all good, right? Like, I go, okay, well, I'm going to send this video home for student A tomorrow. So you guys will watch that and we'll, you know, off we go. And then... And it just sort of, with this one class, it sort of took over, became the way we were doing it. And I was telling a colleague of mine in the staff room, and he's this sort of older teacher who's really gruff and kind of awesome. He looks a bit like Shrek. He's got one of those beautiful faces. And he's like, oh, he just threw a book at me. He's like, this is, I won't swear the way he did. He's like, this book's about that nonsense that you've been doing. And it was the first Bergman Sam's book that I think his daughter had bought for him. Like, this guy's been teaching for a long time. He started teaching the week I was born. So wow. He's been teaching for 35 years, not 34. Anyway, so that was, you know, but he was like, kids, I don't care. And he threw this book at me. And it was, and that's sort of what set me along the road and sort of codified what we were doing a bit. You know, we figured what was good for this kid was good for everyone. And yeah.
I love how, and so from the few people that I know that flip and flip really well, and for myself, flipping has come about, and I don't want to say for a selfish reason, but it's been about the teacher, and it's been about how, for my example, I was bored and I was stale, and this kind of reinvigorated me, this flipped approach. But for you, it's like purely about the student, and I think that's awesome. Like, so you found a solution that was going to help this one particular student. It was never about making it easier for you. In fact, it probably made it harder for you and increased your workload. And I think that's really cool, and it just shows the power that flipped learning has in a variety of scenarios, whether it's, you know, whether it is helping the teacher or whether it's very much student focused, which I know we all know the benefits of it, but it's just so powerful hearing that story. And when I read it, I had to get you to explain it to me.
Well, I am the endless warrior for student support, but that's not really true. A big part of it is that I enjoyed it, you know, like don't get me wrong, I can tell a story, I can, particularly in person, I'm really good with a crowd, and I can, you know, if I've got a bunch of 14-year-olds, I can really get them excited about how, you know, the atoms in them, you know, they come from the earth, which then came from a sun, which then came from another star, and they could all trace back, and I can do all that sort of stuff. And I'm pretty good at it. But I'd been doing it at that stage for 5 years. And I kind of realized I'd gotten good enough at it that I didn't have to think about it. And that I hadn't quite realized how much I was relying on that. So once I started making these videos and every kid was watching it, I was like, well, they don't really need me to tell them the fun story anymore. And that made me sad a little bit to start off with, because I enjoy that. But it meant that they could take over. So yeah, it was still about them, but there was this part that it reinvigorated what I was doing, and it made me feel like I was able to do all those fun, creative things in the classroom that we always, like when we do our teacher training, they're like, you can do this pedagogy, this pedagogy, this pedagogy, but you get there and you're so bogged down in content that you don't have the time for it. So yeah, it sounds very altruistic, and it kind of was, but at the same time, I don't think I would have kept it up the way I did if it wasn't partly for me. Like, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I think the next year I did it for one class for about 6 months, and then not even, maybe 4 months, and then by the end of that year I was flipping all five classes. Don't do that. Don't do that. Not straight away. It's really hard. It was good though, but as you said, it's more work, and it is more work. If someone's going to get into this, know that there may be a long-term payoff where it gets a bit easier. I don't see that because, you know, then you go, oh, actually I want to do this other new stuff, and I want to try this, and you keep building. But it is more work. It's not a less work thing.
No, and my first few years flipping, it was all about the content creation, and I've since come to understand that that's the very last thing that you should be considering. And the strength and the power of the flipped classroom comes with that repurposed classroom time, and being able to take that time you gain from removing the direct instruction or a bit of the direct instruction to have just much more meaningful and authentic experiences for your students. And when you start toying with the content creation and then you throw on the planning component for these repurposed classroom lessons, it's a huge investment. And that's what I've advocated for so long. And teachers always come back to that sticky point of, oh yeah, but I don't have the skills to build the content and blah, 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 blah. But you don't need to do that. You can curate stuff. You can reuse stuff, repurpose stuff, but just focus on what you're going to do in that repurposed classroom time is what I try to get them to understand.
Absolutely. I think I have a real problem with that. Like there's, and that is a constant discussion point in my staff rooms. I've got, there's one, the two sides of it. One is the, I don't have time to do X. Like I don't have time to do this and this and this. I'm just keeping up with all the demands on a teacher and they keep throwing new things at me every year. I don't have time to do that. I kind of understand that. It's and that's whatever. That makes sense. But when it's the, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to make content, or I don't know how to run a website, that's the one that really gets to me. It's a sort of, we're in this job where our whole time we're sitting there going, no, you've got to be a lifelong learner. You've got to be a lifelong learner. Come on, kids. You don't get to say you're not a maths person, but I'm going to sit here and say in the staff room that I'm not a tech person or I'm not a, that one really grates on me. Like, I'm not even one of these people who thinks like teachers need to follow the same rules as kids. Like at my school, kids aren't allowed to bring, they're not meant to bring drinks that aren't water into their class, but be stuffed if I'm not walking into every class with a cup of coffee, and I don't care. Like, yeah, that one, it does, it gets to me a bit, and I hear it more than I'd like. Yeah.
Yeah. Your FlipCon presentation was easily the one that I found most enjoyable of the 2 days at FlipCon NZ. And as you've alluded to, you're a really good speaker, and I think the listeners are going to have already figured that out for themselves. But in the session that I went to, you described your experiences with gamification. So my two big things are flip learning and gamification. Can you give us your definition of gamification and how you implement it within your classes?
Firstly, thank you for the very kind words. I do appreciate it. I'm a completely internally self-validated person, but I do like the validation externally either way. For me, I had a Twitter discussion with a couple of people today about it. I don't know if you have seen it, about gamification. And so gamification, my understanding of it and my usage of it is that it is the use of game mechanics in the classroom. Now, there is also game-based learning. And I think game-based learning falls under, or can fall under if it's done well, the umbrella of gamification. But game-based learning is something which can also be really terrible. So games like Math Blaster, have you ever played that? Like,
yeah.
It's, yeah, so games like Math Blaster where they're nothing but chocolate-covered broccoli. That's not my phrase, that's someone else's, but is genius and it matches it perfectly. The kids go, oh, I'm playing a space game. I'm going to blow stuff up. Oh, hang on. I've just got to go, what's 7 plus 18? Okay, 25, boom. Cool, now I've got bullets to blow that up. Bang, oh, yay. And like they do that for about 5 seconds and they're like, oh, this is really crap because it's boring and it's just you've tricked them. And particularly kids who play games, they're smarter than that. Like they're like, what are you doing to me? I know what this is. So for me, gamification is the use of game mechanics. And that can be something really simple. So my daughter and my son now, they go to a primary school where they have a reader, like a little, you know, a book aimed at a five-year-old and or an eight-year-old, whatever it is. And they take that book home, they read it to us, and we sign it in their little thing. And every time they've read 25 books, they get a little reward. It's the exact same thing as your coffee card, right? when you go to the cafe. That's gamification. That's gamification at its simplest level, and it's gamification at a level which I think long-term is unsustainable because it's purely about that extrinsic reward, but that's gamification. That's a game mechanic applied to whatever situation. One place that does this better than... One place that does this more openly than schools does or do is business, industry. And you've seen this. We've talked about this. So, you know, companies are really good at gamification, whereas schools are just starting to take it on and build it curriculum style. I think with gamification, yeah, you've got the game mechanics into the classroom, but you've got to... The way we look at it is it needs to be a more immersive experience. Otherwise, it's nothing but a add-on to it. And that's fine in itself, by the way. As a way to start and dip your toes in the water, that's completely cool. But yeah, it needs to be, for it to be your pedagogy that things are built around, it's you've got to apply more than just that one game mechanic. It's sort of build the whole thing. And that's when the story comes into it, or experience points and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's it for me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, sure. Dip your toes in and experience simple badges and leaderboards and stuff like that. But yeah, you're right. To really make the most out of this, you need to be considering a lot of those deeper and richer game mechanics, like narrative and how that's explored and used in class, and those other ones, leaderboards and stuff like that, are really good. But you're right. I like what you said about not being sustainable, because at the end of the day, they really are just some of those external rewards. And I know a few educators who just despise external rewards because it doesn't really teach anything. And it's about looking at some of those white hat game mechanics that are all about internal motivation and internal drive. And if we can pull out some of those really well and install them within our classrooms, then you're going to see a much better payoff. The deeper Absolutely. You go, really. And I think, and I like what you said about the game-based learning too, being different to gamification, but still can fit under that umbrella, particularly if you're using a game that has that really strong narrative. Narrative is my favorite one to use, and we do it really well at our school. And we build narrative from the second our kids walk in the door, and that continues on every year, and we continue building that. And we can use that to... I guess draw the kids in and have them relate well to other students, and we have this culture of brotherhood, and that's all, it all comes together through these kind of application of gamification within all different facets of learning for them, and it's really cool. And I think you're right, it is big in business, and it is in its infancy in education. But the more we have people like yourself and myself just kind of pushing some of these ideas and these concepts, and it's going to take hold a little bit stronger, and we can maybe see some of that payoff.
For sure.
What do you think?
Sorry, can I just add one thing there? For me, I think the one you said it sort of, that narrative is key, and I actually think when it comes to that building an internal thing with narrative. And I come from a long, long history of tabletop RPGs, but it's character.
Nice.
Building a character, like, and a sustainable character that they've... Like, my Year 12s have just left, and like, so they do their HSC, which is our end of school exams, in a month or so. And I really miss that class. God, that was so good. But they had these characters that they've had for 2 years, and they're really quite hooked into them. Like, it's sort of, yeah, it's like an avatar. So yeah,
it's,
I think
it's their digital representation of themselves.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome. And we're going to talk a little bit about Classcraft soon, which you use. Really well. Do you think we still suffer from this negative mindset around a stereotypical gamer though, and video games are bad, and nerdy 14-year-old boys play video games and get them out of the classroom? Do you think we still suffer from that?
Yes. I'm laughing because it seemed to have really in my school, in my experience, it seems to have gone back to that. I grew up in like the 90s and the late 80s playing Dungeons and Dragons, right? With it was right when the Satanic Panic heavy metal was causing like that was a thing, and it was never a thing in my house. Like my dad was always like, "That's dumb, don't be stupid," but like there was a thing, right? Like so, I told teachers at school we were doing this, and they got all upset about it. But I think it went through a period there where gaming was kind of cool, but it's definitely gone back. And it could be that as a 35-year-old male, I am maybe the third youngest male staff member at my school.
Wow.
At least academic staff. The women at our school, they've got a big range, and actually they've got a range, whereas most of us tend to get like the next one, it's 40s and 50s, the males in my school, and the women, it's roughly the same, except we've got some more young ones. So we have, I get that a bit, and I see kids get that a bit. They'll sort of, we'll talk about this gamification, Classcraft and our Dungeons and Dragons style classroom to a lot of the teachers, and they just can't wrap their brains around it. It just seems to melt them a little bit. And then they get to the point where they're like, well, we've got a lot of curriculum to get to. We can't be sitting there playing games with the kids. And how does this relate to that? I'm like, that's not what we're doing. And yeah, so there is a bit of that. And I mean, when I'm 35 and I'm still sometimes seen as the new kid with dumb ideas, so I don't know, but it's, yeah, so there's a bit of that, but not with the kids. What blew my mind was, because again, I grew up in the 90s, and if you were playing video games and stuff then, or Dungeons and Dragons or whatever, it was not, a big deal, like, as long as you were hanging out with the guys. The second you were hanging out with your friend, and most of my friends at school were girls, but the second I was hanging out with the girls, like, they weren't into it at all. Like, this was, that's stupid. What are you talking about? What do you mean you're a half-orc? That makes no sense. but now, the second I brought this up in any of my classes, I would say my biggest buy-in comes from the girls, because it's a little bit outside of their experience, but not a lot. Like, they all play games. They all run around with an iPad or a phone. They're all, at the very least, casual gamers. And I think that's broken down that stereotype a lot, the sort of casual games on the handheld devices. So yep. That's the most teacher thing I've ever said, handheld devices. I think that negative stereotype is still there, alive and strong with grown-ups. I think with the kids, it's probably better than it's ever been. Like, the kids are really, they're all into it. They're like, not a drama, let's go. But yeah, there's still, because we've got, I won't lose my job for this probably. It doesn't matter. They're not listening. So our school has iPads, right? And whatever you think of iPads for schools, if the kids are playing games on the iPad, that's on you. Like, that kid's 14. If he's bored, he's obviously going to sit there and play a game on his iPad. And if he's, I don't know, if the Clash of Clans, or if your class is not more interesting than Clash of Clans, that's on you. And I think because of that, like, we still have this really, in my school at least, this very negative approach to games, because that's what ruins their education, maybe, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, the casual games have been fantastic for gaming. Funny story, I was considering selling my PS4. I'm a diehard console gamer, and
yep,
I've travelled the world competing, playing video games, but I just can't bring myself to start up and sit down and play a game for 3 hours anymore. I'd much rather sit and play Clash of Clans for 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and then turn it off and not think about it. I just, you have kids, you have your other priorities, and unfortunately for me, gaming has kind of dropped off. But the casual games is, I think it's massive, and people always, every gamification presentation I do, I say, okay, what's the split, male, female, what are the percentages? And everybody, I haven't had one group say 46-54-ish, they always say 80-20, 90-10, and they're blown away by this, that it's come around and it's like 50-50. They don't get it, and it's because of those casual games. And I think it's awesome, and it's awesome to see chicks gaming. It's awesome to see them exploring, and you see a lot of girls picking up coding and stuff like that, and it's fantastic. We need more people doing that sort of thing.
Well, absolutely. So my daughter's 8, and she's not super into video games, but she's a writer, and she loves the idea of writing stuff. So, you know, like this holiday's just gone, and she had a couple of sick days in the last week or two. So I was like, oh, well, we're at home, we're bored. I loaded her up a course on code.org, right? And the second she could see, she saw that she could write a video game, and within an hour, not an hour, but within like a day, she'd made a little video game. And the second she realized that she could turn her writing into this other format, she was like, so now she's like, I dig my coding, and she wants to do that as much as she can. And that's it, right? So it's just sort of, these games are this other entryway into, for her, it's an extra mode of expression. And I struggle when we, you know, because I'll mention it to the teachers I work with, and a lot of them will say, what about the girls? I'm like, what do you mean, what about the girls? Like, they're right into it. Like, there's still, you know, it's still science. They're still, you know, doing this and that. But they like the add-on stuff. And for some of them, because they're girls, they've not been exposed culturally to this the way the boys have. So the boys are right into it. Whereas the girls, it's new. And they're like, yeah, let's try this. So I dig that. For me, I don't get rid of your PlayStation, man. Don't do that. I mean, I'm an Xbox guy, but I've got my hockey game on there. And that's the one now that my kids are finally at that age that I can... I don't have 3 hours to play, but I can sit down and I can play a 12-minute hockey game, and then I can get back to work. So, yeah. Don't ever do it.
So, tell us about Classcraft. You know, describe the platform for our listeners, and describe how you use it with your students.
Yeah. So, Classcraft for us is, it's not our main interface with the gamification stuff, but it is absolutely the kids' interface. So Classcraft is a platform where the students get a character, and it's a little avatar. It's really good for putting the kids into groups. So, you know, you can have we'll use the right terminology. You can put your kids into a party. And Classcraft is, it gives you a healer, a mage, and a warrior. Now, what blew me away is Lord of the Rings used to be for nerds, right? It was something that nerds had read, and the nerds loved it, and we held it dear, and yeah, it was really for us. But now every kid's seen Lord of the Rings. So I didn't even have to explain these concepts to people. I really thought I would. But this whole idea of a party that goes on a quest, it's all, they get it already. So it's kind of, the kids understand it. So you've got a party. It's a digital avatar, and you put them in a group. So you go, all right, I've got a group of three or a group of four. I'll have two warriors, a healer, and a mage. And they get their digital avatar, and each avatar has a different set of skills, for example. And what you do with that is you can give them experience points, which means they've done a task, so you give them points. The more tasks they do, they level up. And as they level up, they get certain powers. The powers can be things like protection, or they can hand in an assignment a day late, or flipped homework, that sort of stuff.
For all the listeners too, all of those features that you've just explained, these are all game mechanics that are within the game that you can pull out and use with your classes in different ways. But so the things like, what were some of the ones you just listed? The quest, for example, that's a game mechanic.
Yeah.
And the XP, the experience points, that's a game mechanic, and all of these game mechanics. So just for our listeners. So, sorry.
No, that's right. Yeah, sorry. No, you're right. I was rambling a bit there. So I'll focus. I'll tunnel in. Okay, so first off, you get experience points, hit points, and gold, okay? Gold allows them to buy stuff within the game. the experience points is every time they do an activity or whatever, you give them experience points. And the experience points are a very, we talk about explicit learning a lot. This gives them a really clear roadmap of how much work they've done. And there's no fudging it. Like, they can see very clearly what they've done. And that's perfect. The health points or hit points, that's your classroom management. So the hit points for us, like, we sort of, you can toggle the settings a little bit. And so we've set it so that it's a bit more neutralized. You know, it starts off with your warrior's got more hit points than your healer. But the way that works is if your healer does something wrong, something against the rules, you punish them. And you punish them by, you set what the damage will be or whatever, and you damage their character. And if so, that's like a warning system, a really visible, clear warning system that they are outside of the school, the class rules or the school rules, and they need to get back in. So, you know, they get hammered a little bit. They've got a warning about their behavior. They come back in. If they don't, eventually their character will die. But you've got a healer who can give you hit points back if they've got enough sort of magics left up. Your mage can transfer the damage to another group, which I kind of like. So there's a bit of that. And your warrior, he can protect everyone. He can take the hit. He's got more hits than more hit points than everyone else, and he can take the damage for the entire team. So, you know, there's that. So those are your three core game mechanics there. And when they die, it's really fun. You can, there's a bit of randomness involved, so you can set whatever the punishments are. You know, you can, for us, we work within our school learning, our school behavior management system. So we've got like a detention, which is rubbish, but it's what we have to do. But instead of just giving you detention every time, we've got, you can hang out with Mr. Whiting and Mr. Catterson at lunch. Or you can clean the lab, because we're science teachers. They don't love the hanging out with us, because we make them sit in my office with us, and actually we talk to them about their weekend and stuff like that. It's really awkward and fun. And the fourth option is nothing. Like, they just, there's a 1 out of 4 chance they'll get away with it. And sometimes that happens. And that's pretty good, actually. We quite like that, because we don't like to punish the kids too much. We enjoy them. But yeah, it's just a way for them to track their progress. And it sounds super nerdy, but the kids really get into it. I think the best way to get the experience with that one is to just sort of log in and have a bit of a play with a test class.
I think so. And the platform is fantastic. I do fear that all of our listeners, the second you mention Mage, Healer and Warrior, close the podcast episode.
Because you're a PE teacher podcast.
But no, I've had a look, and I'm going to get it going with one of my classes next year, probably. I'm a gamer. I love that sort of thing, and it looks amazing. And especially the more you, and unfortunately with things like this, you have to engage quite a bit for it to really see the payoff with the students. And if you engage with it, then the students are going to engage with it, and then it'll be good. But sorry, you're going to say?
Oh, no, I was just saying, like, and you're right there. It needs to be a constant thing. So we've all, well, in our school, we've all got smart boards in our room. And I imagine that's probably the same at most schools now, or some form of projector or screen. And I don't think we use those particularly well. So, but that's been okay, because we've now pretty much, we've got Classcraft on the screen at all times. And the kids can have it on their mobile phones or their iPads. So, you know, if they can see that their character's getting hurt a bit too much, they can go over to, you know, the kid in the, just next door, and they're like, oi, can you just heal us up a bit? Because it's starting to, I'm about to die, and, you know.
But that's good. That's a form of mentorship, I guess. That's seeking help from somebody else.
Yeah, and it absolutely brings in a bit of, because when your character dies, it hurts the rest of the group. So it's not punishing other people for the misdeeds of another, but it really, because it's never enough. If you die from that, you were already almost dead anyway. but it's enough to just sort of show that, hey, my actions are having that impact on other people. And again, it's that really sort of explicit, clear reminder. But I'll tell you what, if it's not your thing, we started, and our back end of it is still an Excel spreadsheet where we give the kids points for everything they've done. We collect data about what tasks they've done, and we give them levels on that. that's still our back end. And it's so you don't have to go into something like this. If you're worried that the kids are all going to be like, oh, that's a bit nonsense, sir, I'm not doing that. There's always the really straightforward end. And like, so my teaching partner, John Catterson, he doesn't have the same love for this sort of stuff that I do. And so with his seniors, he very much runs a spreadsheet, a Google spreadsheet for him. Whereas with his juniors, he's right into the classcraft as well.
Yeah, I could see how that the whole fantasy user interface and stuff like that could scare some people away. But I really do recommend taking a look and at least having a little play with it and see what you think, because those mechanics that are within it they're easy to implement within that platform. If you try to pull them out individually and create standalone mechanics in your classroom in other ways, it gets a little bit harder, but it's all there. And when you stack these game mechanics one upon each other, it becomes even more powerful, this aspect of gamification. So
absolutely,
give it a whirl. I was super pumped to see that you're right into or have spent some time working within a Genius Hour type approach, and I've got quite a few listeners who are kind of looking into it and kind of exploring it in certain ways. You look like you've done it really well. What was the key to your success implementing that? Because even myself, I tried and I had to pull the pin for a number of reasons, but tell us how you were so successful with that.
The key to my success, as always, is John Catterson, JF Catto on Twitter. He's, have you ever read the Cult of Pedagogy blog?
No.
They did this. It's my favorite blog post I've ever read. It's called, favorite blog post. It's called Find Your Marigold. And marigolds are plants that you plant with other plants and they support them and grow. Before you jump into anything like this, try and find someone to do it with, because other people are going to call what you're doing stupid. And that way you've got someone that you can go back to your office with or their office with, and you can be like, oh, such and such is such an idiot. Or, what do they know? And have that back and forth. But for me, John is also the one that keeps me focused, because my ADHD kicks in and I can't help it. And I was like, cool, we've done this for 3 weeks. All right, let's try something different. Don't worry about it. We'll try a new thing. And he sort of helps. And that's been the key. The key for us was sticking with it, because the first round wasn't super great. It was good for some kids, but not perfect. It's never been perfect. And it's not going to be perfect. The second round, when we stuck with it, the kids knew what they were doing. They knew what the expectations were. And it worked a lot better. What we found the second time, was scaffolding. We all read about Genius Hour and it's this time for the kids to do whatever they want. It's there, they're off to experiment and solve a problem or whatever. What we found was that's very good, but the kids needed a bit more guidance than we thought. So we had three concepts, as we're doing it over three terms. We had, the first concept was the past. So this is something that happened in the past, which is really good because had to be a non-Googleable question or whatever. But we figured they could look something up and build a model or build a thing, and away we go. And some of the kids did really great at it. My favorite one was one group of kids built a game explaining how people thought they could treat the plague based on the card game Exploding Kittens. Nice.
That game, I looked at that game. Was that amazing? As amazing as it looked?
It is phenomenal. If anyone goes to my blog, it's mrvanw.com, they can see what the first round did. And it was just... They're not professional quality, but they are so very, very close to professional quality.
They look it, mate. I'll add the links in the show notes and stuff like that.
Because it was really cool, wasn't it? That one blew my mind. And you know what? I don't mind saying this. Those aren't top kids. I think they're top kids. They're great kids, and I love them. But they're not top academic kids. They're fine, but they're not that top rung. And that's going to be the first time in a while that those kids have just gone, holy crap. Mm. Not only did I do something cool, that I think is cool. Everyone here saw what I did and was just like, well done, that's amazing. Mm. So, yes, that was really cool. But there's also, so yes, but we started scaffolding it. The first one we were like, okay, cool, here it is, go nuts, bang, off you go. And, you know, 10 weeks later, they were like, some of them were all right. The second one, we were like, okay, here's a bit more scaffolding. You've got to tell us what you're doing early. Okay, so make a decision. So that's a hard part. Make a decision. And then come back and we'll do it in in 10 weeks, whatever it is. But we're presenting it in public. We're going to invite any teachers that want to come along with their classes or whatever. We'll do it in the school's hall. And anyone who wants to come can come and watch you guys present. And that, once it was a bit more public and not just for those two classes, they were like, oh, okay, this is serious. Let's give this a proper go.
They have to be accountable.
Yeah, they're accountable. And the third time, the one that we've got going now, I think it's going better. They won't present for another 3 weeks yet. No, 6 weeks. I think it's going better. But what they've done is, like in this last round, we had kids write songs and do all sorts of stuff, which is really cool. Kids who've never done that before. But this next one, the way I think that we've kind of, I hope, nailed it, was we gave them we're like, okay, so here's the thing. It's about the future. You got to solve something in the future or try to solve it. And in 3 weeks, you have to have a proposal ready. And that proposal is going to be a presentation to your class and the other class where everyone else can give you a bit of feedback and help you out. And I think that has been the magic bullet, having that sort of proposal so that they can get feedback a bit earlier and also lock them into something, forced them to make a decision early. I think that's been the key. So yeah, just scaffold it a bit. Don't just go, oh, you get to do whatever you want, because kids when you give them that, you can do whatever you want, they just go, oh, well, now I have all the choices in the world. Oh, this is crippling and I feel nothing but anxiety. And that's sort of what happened. So yeah, scaffold it.
Yeah, you've given me a few good ideas. Where mine fell over was I didn't scaffold. Oh, no, I tried to a little bit. But I found that my students, and I had the perfect setup. I had a level 3 class, so year 13. I only had 10 kids in the class. It was perfect. I thought it was going to be everything that it wasn't. But so, yeah, it kills me thinking about it. But what I found with these kids was they couldn't get away from a traditional learning environment. They wanted to hear me tell them what to do. They wanted to have tasks to do. They couldn't just go away like I hoped. Yep. And it's not like, it wasn't even like I was like, okay, you go do your genius hour and I'll sit here on my computer. It wasn't even like that. I was trying to engage with them. I was trying to talk with them, but I guess there was that scaffolding was a little amiss, and there wasn't as much accountability. Like, I guarantee if I'd said that, okay, the level 2 classes are coming to your presentations and I've invited the principal and the senior managers and the HODs, if I'd said that, then there would have been stuff done and they would have been set up ready to go for the rest of the year, hopefully. So yeah, some of that stuff, I think, and I hope my audience who are thinking about Genius are taking this on board, because not only scaffolding and stuff like that, also it's different for every single class. Like, your kids are all different. Scaffolding, absolutely. You might walk into a class and say, hey, this is what we're doing, and the kids go, boom, sweet, I'm out, done, dusted, and they pull off a massive effort for the whole year. You might scaffold everything and hold their hands all the way through and achieve nothing. It's almost like the luck of the draw. But I think it's something really, really worthwhile considering, because you know, get away from the assessment driven focus that we have in secondary school. Just give them a chance to learn how to learn and do things that they're passionate about. And if we could do this stuff when I was at school, I guarantee I would have had a much richer experience, and
I'd have been better at school, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's I'm gonna give it another whirl, but I don't think I'm going to have the environment that I had this year that could have been so great for me, but that's okay.
So level 3, that's your top class, right?
Yeah, that's last year of school.
Yeah. For us, our top, so our classes are streamed. I won't go into how I feel about that. But
I won't tell you how I feel about it.
Yeah. But our top class, they hated it to start off with.
Mm.
Like they were the ones who, like my, I've got a class who sort of middle to bottom, and they were like, yeah, let's do this. Let's give this a bash. But the top class are the ones that were going, can't we just, look, we've got tests in like 8 weeks. I'm like, yeah, you've got tests in 8 weeks. Be cool. So don't worry about it. So you're in year eight. The tests don't matter anyway. And so, yeah, they were our top classes, or our academic top classes, not year top classes, but our academic top classes were our biggest resistors by a long shot.
Yeah. I'm in discussions with two other HODs who we might have a bit of a united front and put together something for some of our junior classes, which will be really interesting. I think will be, I think that will be really good, but I don't know, time will tell, and we'll see what next year brings us. We're getting along, and it's almost been an hour, so this last question coming up, you can only play one game on one gaming console or platform for the rest of your life. What's your game of choice and why?
This is the hardest question in the world. Now, so, okay, so, is it my current life situation now where I've got kids, or am I on a desert island allowed to play whatever I want? Because those are different things.
I think you have to be on a desert island because...
Oh, sick, yes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, so... Okay, so if it isn't the desert island, it's my kids. It's absolutely hockey, like 100%, or FIFA, one of those two, because it's like an in and out bang, done. But for me, the perfect game is without a doubt Super Mario 2 on the NES. No competition. I don't know if I could rest of my life on it, but I feel as though I could. Like it's a beach. I've got beaches. It's a desert thing. We're all good. I'm fine. I can come back. But for me, Mario is that perfect game. It's a simple... Everyone knows what Mario is. Simple side-scroller. The mechanics are perfect. You can stretch... There's a bit of stretching out. There's some choices to make. But it's just perfect. I could play Mario till the day I die. I also know that anyone who comes along, if anyone props along my island, I can throw them a controller. They can play Mario as well because it's simple and it's easy. But it's hard. It's got that mastery bit to it. It's I think Mario might be the perfect, I don't know, analogy for life and everything. I love Mario. Mario is the best. So yes, Mario.
I just think you've been a little bit linear in your choice there. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if I could handle that being on it. If the desert island had fiber access internet, I'd have to go with some sort of online strategic multiplayer game. I just the side scrolling linear approach, I can do it for, you know, it can keep me motivated for a week or two, but then, yeah, perfect example, one of the very first games I played was Lode Runner. Do you know Lode Runner?
I know Lode Runner, yep.
And I was fascinated by that game, and as an 8 or 9 year old, I managed to get to the end of it, and I just bought a new phone. I thought, sweet, it's an iPhone Plus, so it's a bigger screen. I thought, sweet, I'll download Lode Runner and I'll be, you know, I'm going to smash this. And I got up to level 7 and I went, I died 3 times in a row and I went, I'm going to delete this. And that's it. I haven't gone back to it.
I feel as though you changed, not the game, don't be like that. if I need something that's a bit deeper, to be honest, okay, so me, I love video games, but my gaming thing, if I could, like, I play a game every fortnight, and that's Dungeons & Dragons. Bunch of teachers come around, and we play Dungeons & Dragons in my back shed for hours, and we drink heaps of beer. It's usually a Wednesday night, so Thursday's a bit rough, but we just drink heaps of beer, and we play Dungeons & Dragons, and have the best time. The closest game experience I've ever had to that, although solo, not with that group, is Fallout 3 or Fallout 4. Okay. That's if I wanted something big and expansive where I could just, you know, build my world. Maybe you're right. It's Fallout 3. Fallout 3's got better vaults than Fallout 4 does. But yeah, maybe that. But I still think Mario could keep me on for a long time.
Okay. Hey, Pete, I just want to thank you for taking the time out to have a yarn and a chat. I think it's really clear that I'm trying to put this in a way that doesn't insult you or
go for it. I'm a teacher. I'm used to it.
Make me sound a little bit arrogant because I'm not trying to come across that at all. But like my two things are flipped learning and gamification, which you're like super passionate about. And then I tried to do this whole passion project thing. And so you're like the science. We're like, I'm the PE version. You're the science version, is what I'm trying to say. And we've done very similar things. No,
it's good. I'm all right with that.
And I, you know, it just shows that you embrace innovative approaches and you're prepared to give it a whirl, and it's really clear that you're doing it for the right reasons. It's not all about you, it's about your students, but also about having a little bit of fun and making your classes interesting. So I really do encourage my listeners to check out some of your stuff. Go check out the play game that was created by your students. Go check out Classcraft. Go and explore your blog, which has some fascinating stuff around your flipped approaches and stuff like that, because you're doing wicked things, and we need more teachers doing wicked things. So yeah, really do appreciate you taking the time, and you've inspired me to do a few more things in 2018, so really do appreciate it, mate.
No worries. Can I give like my podcast a little plug?
Yeah, go for gold, mate.
Yeah, sweet. If you enjoy my dulcet tones, and while it's not as wonderful as the glorious, glorious Kiwi accent, which I never appreciated as much as I did until I went to New Zealand. Oh, so good. Anyway, you can hear me and my teaching buddy chatting about education, but usually nonsense as well. At Teachers Talking Teaching. He came up with the name. It's a constant battle in my life. That's us. And thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it. And look, I'll be the science teacher version of you any day you want, mate. That's I'm neither that tall nor that beautiful and fit. So it's not a drama.
It's not how it was supposed to come out, but it's,
I'll take it. It's
you're in Melbourne, are you?
No, I'm in rural New South Wales, a place called Orange. Which sounds like it's gonna have this nice and lovely weather, but it's so cold. Like it was the only place I could imagine. Like when we went to Wellington, it was warmer and drier than it was back home. So
But see, now I'm really depressed because for some reason I thought you were in Melbourne, and I was like, man, next time I'm in Melbourne on a Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm hitting you up because I've never played Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, I tell you what, in all seriousness, this probably could be off podcast, I don't care, or on, whatever. More PE teachers should play Dungeons and Dragons. Usually we do it in the back basement, but sometimes we have to do it online because most of us have small kids.
Okay.
If we ever end up going back there, I'll give you a yell and you can jump on the Skype call.
Sounds good, mate. Sounds good. Hey, appreciate the time.
No worries, mate. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.